Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell. I'm your host on Tuesdays for the Engagement Hours. And Matt Neely is behind the glass, as always, not only spinning the tunes, but more importantly, keeping me on time and target. Yeah, so Matt, back in the days, you know, I think I've got a few years on you. I think we're pretty close. But
pretty
back
close.
In the days, there's no doubt that hot slides were a way of life.
Right.
I mean, and then they went to the plastic or right. The recycled plastics, you know, those materials, and that maybe have improved them a little. I mean, they weren't the good old metal ones.
Challenges in the hot sun because then the slides get kind of warpy.
Oh yeah, that is true. Things all change. Well, I know there are some definite slides around town that are being repaired and replaced as some of the parks. I believe Santa Rita Park's going through a big remodel now, and we'll see how that goes. Obviously, the parks continue to be an area of contention in the region. And I thought we'd just kind of open the door and talk a little bit about stuff going on. We've got a big show today coming with us. We're going to talk a lot of RTA. I don't know if that's just my inner brain that's focused so heavily right now on the situation inside the RTA yep. coming out. But we're going to bring on Mike Noble with Noble Predictive Insights, a pollster who has conducted a poll for the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, Tucson Metro Chamber, which is now the Chamber of Arizona as well, several other entities, which I'll make sure to mention when we get to the point of talking about the poll. It's really going to be the first time it's going to release some of the information. We're going to slowly play this out. I've been hoping to wait for a lot of this data to come out once we got past the current let's call it a kerfuffle that's going on right now at the RTA and the PAG board and some issues we've got going on. Once we can get past and solve those, I think we're going to be able to get back on focusing, and that's getting the RTA back. So Mike Noble is going to join us, and then the second half hour, we're going to have Supervisor Rex Scott, the current chair of the Board of Supervisors. We'll probably talk a little bit about budget and their full meeting that they've got scheduled for today, but one of the reasons I asked him to come on is I wanted to hear his thoughts, since he's no longer on the RTA board, and a lot of this has all begun since his departure from that board. See what he's thinking about the RTA as well. I'm still such a strong supporter of the RTA. We'll spend some time doing that today. Doesn't directly relate to those hot slides that we were talking about moments ago, but yeah, I tell you,
it's the hot seat though.
It is the hot seat, yeah. And I think people are going to be intrigued and surprised by some of the. They probably won't be surprised because I think most people understand that and realize what the transportation system and network, and mm-hmm. it is a network between the roads and vehicles and transit and biking. It's all a network, and we need all of it. Mm-hmm. But I think sometimes we get bogged down into the argument of which one's more important, which one's the folks use more often. And I think we're going to have some interesting data for them to see today. But appreciate everybody always tuning in. We're also going to be experimenting today. This connection we're going to do today, for at least an experiment for me, Matt. I know you've got a little experience back there. But we're going to try today connecting with some modern technology, and I'm going to be linking in with Mike Noble via Zoom. And hopefully, Matt, I guess I haven't admitted you, so we might as well get you in the room to make sure it actually works.
Sure. There we go.
And we don't have any feedback. So far it sounds good.
So far so good. See?
It's pretty easy because we're 15 feet apart from each other, yeah, just with right. glass in front of us.
And going now to a server India or
yeah,
something.
Yeah, and now we're already connected.
We're all going through here.
On technology. So Matt, in your new role, you know, here at KVOI, you've got a lot of the responsibilities for a lot of this, the change that we're starting to look at and take on. What's your take so far? I mean, we've now got cameras all around these rooms.
Right.
We've got-
and so this is other folks that are putting this in. And we're me in my role as board op/producer, I'm trying to figure out how to get all this stuff to run the way we want it to. And other people are working on it. But in the near future, we should be going out on Facebook Live. I could do a test one probably today, but we'll be going out on Facebook Live and, you know, maybe other platforms. So yeah, we're all adjusting to, We've got the audio board here, but now we've got a video board that we got to figure out. So it's pretty user friendly. So there's a few tricks, but I think we'll get there.
You know, this almost seems to me like some of the transition to internet and email and phones. You know, everybody now, can you imagine life without one of your phones in your hands?
Yeah.
It'd just be really difficult. And I'm not sure if it's for the better or not yet. You know, I think there's a lot of times where if we didn't have all of our phones, yeah, we need them when we need them.
Oh, you're going to open that can of worms. How long you got, Ted?
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a mixed blessing, isn't it? Because they turn into time vacuum machines, too. So they just make time just mysteriously disappear quickly. So it is, you know, conveniences are nice, but there are trade-offs from them.
And old school radio, I think, that serves such an incredible purpose at times. It's just nice sometimes to listen to the voices, and we won't get away from that as we expand.
You'll still have that option.
I think our number one customer, or our listener, all 37 of them or 38 of them, are those that get in their car, turn on the radio, and they don't want to listen to music. They want to see what's going on locally, and that's what makes shows like The Morning Voice unique, because we are the trusted local news and talk in this routine. We are the live local conversations. And 5 days, you got five different hosts and you've got five different topics. Obviously, Lady Aranda had Rainmakers on yesterday, and that sounded like a
great
good
conversation
show
with the Girl Scouts.
Yeah.
With Kristen from the Girl Scouts. Very interesting. So, it's good to know there's positive outlets for kids to develop as human beings and to gain life skills and important life skills, and also to form childhood memories. So it's very, it was really interesting. Yesterday, the podcast is up at KVOI.com. Absolutely. So good to hear. Yeah, it was a good second hour, and the first hour was interesting too. So yeah.
And I do like the fact that five different shows, five different topics. There's something a little bit for everybody. You know, we obviously Grant and I may focus a little more on the politics, although I think we all kind of touch on it. But sometimes, you know, people are looking for different things on their drive to work. What do they want to hear?
Yes, absolutely. And I mean, it's everything from attractions and entertainment and things, fun things that are going on in Tucson. You'll learn what's going on in the restaurant scene, but you'll also learn about how political maneuvers that are happening at the state, county, and local level are impacting you and business owners and everybody and restaurant owners. You bring the perspective of what's going on at the legislature and what's, you know, how the sausage is made policy wise,
which is not a lot right now, but it's about to start. The House is back in session today.
Is she stopping? Is she going to take a pause from vetoing things?
Yeah, well, I know that's, you know, when there's no legislature in sessions, she's got all the time to review the governor's got all the time to review those bills that are sitting on her desk. And, you know, it keeps life exciting.
And Fridays you hear what's going on at the University of Arizona. And sometimes the headlines focus on some of the more controversial things. But there's behind that, there's a lot of people doing a lot of really interesting stuff. And so, you know, you've got this great source of information all week long of things that are going on in Tucson, a lot of which affect you and a lot of which you might not know about if it weren't for this show.
Absolutely. And as a plug tonight at Caruso's I believe it's 6:30 to 8:00, there's a meet and greet with some of the hosts and the folks behind the scenes for The Morning Voice. I'll apologize in advance. I will not be there. Yeah, it's 5:30. Yeah, I think
I'll double check.
There's so much on my calendar this evening that was all conflicting, and now I'm trying to go do am I going to be able to do any of it? But I believe you're right. I'm sure you're going to hear a commercial through this segment that will give you that insight. And also, because we've got the live stream not up on the air, but we've got it on the radio today. We're using our interview this morning with Mike Noble to test it. If you do have any feedback, if you're hearing anything on the radio that doesn't quite sound right, please give us a call at 520-790-2040. Let us know what you're thinking. And also, I always encourage you to try to call in. I think I'm going to add that a little more often in the repertoire. What I say to our listeners is please call in and join. And always open for conversation. We're always open for different topics, and especially today as we talk through the RTA and what it looks like and what the people have told our pollsters what they would like to see. We're always looking for the input from everybody who's listening to the radio.
Yep. 520-790-2040 if you'd like to call in. And yes, the eat and greet, meet and greet is 530 to 7, Caruso's, 434 North 4th Avenue. Forward to seeing the listeners there.
And Caruso's is truly an incredible Italian restaurant. Long history, long time in Tucson, and the food truly, truly is amazing. So I'm sure everybody would love to see some folks out there with the meet and greets at this point. Have been really good to get and meet and talk to some of the people that listen to us. And we appreciate your continued support on The Morning Voice. And we're going to go to a break right now. And when we come back, hopefully we'll have Mike Noble on line via the, we haven't even named it. Matter of fact, I saw he just entered the room, Matt, so I'll be accepting him. And when we come back, we'll have Mike Noble from Noble Predictive Insights with us. I guess today, that's what it would be. It's going to be a different live line every day.
Okay,
that's the best part of
it.
So that's good. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. We'll be right back after the break. Thank you for listening. Good morning, and welcome back to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely's behind the glass. And we now have Mike Noble connected with us via the SALC live line, or AKA the Zoom link. So, Mike, good morning. How can you hear us?
Good morning. I can hear you perfectly. And by the way, I'm happy to be a guinea pig for the first ever Zoom link live on your show. So I'm thrilled to be here.
Well, we aren't exactly posting it out there live yet, but it is definitely, it's the first step in the process for Tuesday morning version of The Morning Voice. So I greatly appreciate to have you on, Mike. Mike is the founder and CEO of Noble Predictive Insights, the leading nonpartisan public opinion polling, marketing, research, and data analytics firm based in the Southwest. Full disclosure, our SALC's used Noble Predictive Insights quite often. I've gotten to know Mike over probably about the last 4 or 5 years. I trust him. I believe the polling they do is absolutely top notch. I'm hoping he'll do a little bragging and talk about some of his successes, not only in predicting elections here in Arizona, but also nationwide. One of the things I do appreciate about him is that he's good at taking some ribbing when necessary. And one of the first meals we had down in Southern Arizona was up at the Sands Club. And being the ASU graduate, I think it was a little difficult for him to be sitting with me up in the box up there at the Sands Club. But we got him to open the door. The two of us went out onto the seats up there, and he was good enough to take a picture and send it to all of his buddies. Maybe not. He at least might have sent it to somebody and pretend like it of him with the big logo, the big A. In the background on the floor. So, Mike, appreciate you joining us today.
Thanks. I still have nightmares, by the way, from that experience.
we'll continue. It's definitely led to some great text conversations at key times. Some of them that I won't mention have not been so enjoyable, but there's been a lot of good ones that I've had had coming back. So I appreciate
healthy rivalry.
I appreciate you being here. You are an ASU graduate, and you're also a member of ASU's Walter Cronkite Board of Directors. But on this show, I want to give a little bit more of your story before we get into some of the facts of the poll. So can you kind of talk through where you grew up, kind of your schooling, what led you to where you are today?
Well, I appreciate that, Ted. And I feel like this is my Marvel superhero moment to tell my origin story. So I'm excited. I don't know if it's going to live up as much to the hype as, let's say, Iron Man, Captain America, but I'll do my best. For myself, I'm actually from the Midwest originally. I was born in Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Grew up kind of in the suburbs there on 124th Street in Waukesha County. Anyways, I got used to shoveling snow and pulling leaves out of the gutter and all that. So your typical Midwest life. But then at age 11, came out here to Arizona. That was my mom, brother, and I. Anyways, went to school in the West Valley, went to Centennial High School in the West Valley, Maricopa County, and then got into sports, and then wound up getting a scholarship to go play football at Mesa Community College. And did that. After 2 years, I realized I wasn't going pro, because if you round up, I'm 5'8 on a good day. And so Anyways, I'm like, all right, they're clearly not going to be, you know, the next Cam Scataboo or some of these other players out there. And so anyways, wrapped up my degree at ASU with a communications major. And it was funny that coming out, I feel like this is the common thread. Like 80% of college graduates, they don't actually know what they want to do coming out of it. It's like, you know, you got to go get a degree. You get the degree, you get down, you're like, what do you want to do? It wasn't like since I was like age eight, like I want to be a doctor or I want to be a lawyer or whatever career there is out there. And it's funny for me, I saw this movie called Thank You for Smoking, which was about a lobbyist in the tobacco industry. And anyways, it was fascinating. Check it out. It's got Aaron Eckhart in there. He's the guy in Batman that plays Two-Face. Anyways, it's a great cast. It's funny, but it's about a lobbyist, which a lot of people don't know of the term lobbyist, but what they do. Anyways, I found that fascinating. I was like, I want to do that. And that spawned my career. I landed up working in politics my first 8 years in the campaign side. Basically, there's three areas of politics, I would say. You have like the institutional side. So like, let's say staffing for a congressman or working in government. There's one, or I'd say the public side. And then you have the private side. So working for like a consulting firm or you know, being a fundraiser, a lobbyist, all these things there. And then and then third branch is actually so professional side on the campaigns, and then there's lobbying. So basically public policy, and then you have your campaign. So anyways, kind of these three branches. I fell into the campaign one, which most start that way, but it is best way to describe it, it's a meat grinder. I had never worked so much in my life and never got paid so little. I once did the math of what, you know, my hours to what I was paid. It came out to like $3.15 an hour, which was lower than minimum wage. And this was before minimum wage was increased. Remember, it was like $5.40 or $5.50. Anyways, it was lower than that. I was like, wow, I could be making more money working over at McDonald's than I am working for this person running for Congress or whatever, right? And so my first race, I started at the city of Mesa, which is the here in Arizona. It's the 24th largest city in the country. I think it's like 120 or 130 square miles. It is massive. It's a lot of area to cover. That's where I started. I did that, and I worked for Congressman Schweikert's campaign. He's over in the Northeast Valley. And anyways, cut my teeth. And this is the fun part. So I did it for about 2.5 years, and like six different times, I'm like, I need to quit. Like, this is brutal. It's tough. And, you know, I'm gonna go get a real job that pays me, I have normal hours, people could see me. And, anyways, I got convinced to like, why don't you start your own consulting firm? It was actually my brother who's, it's actually his birthday today. So happy birthday, John Noble. Shout out.
There you go. Good for John. Another year around the planet.
He's 32, air quotes.
Got it.
And so he's like, hey, why don't you start your own business? I'm like, that's insane. Like, I was like, I don't know anything about this. Anyways, he created an LLC for me. Next thing you know, I've had that one for like 16 years. But then I ended up being a full-blown general consultant at like age 25, doing races, congressional races, mayor's races, local dog catcher, you name it. So I got to cut my teeth on campaigns. But after about 8 years, it takes a special breed of person to be a general consultant in my experience. So I've always enjoyed polling, et cetera, worked with pollsters. So I started polling myself. 8 years later, we have hands down the most dominant firm in the Southwest region, the most respected firm, you know, as a nonpartisan group. So think of Gallup or Pew Research. If they had a baby of SpaceX, you'd have Noble Predictive Insights. So innovative, but also staying with some of the tried and true and really focusing on trust and, you know, you get numbers on a race. One's going to be up, one's going to be down. So half will hate you, half will like you. And then you can do, you know, a month or so later, it's flip-flop. So here's the thing. At the end of the day, I can't make everyone happy. But what I always endeavor to do is making sure that, you know, we make sure that we're calling it accurately, right? Like whether it's Trump or Biden or Harris or whoever, is that at the end of the day, are we right? Are we, you know, giving you the correct insights to know to separate the noise from reality in politics? Anyway,
so you just winded. You kind of alluded there that you've gone to doing even more national polling because
when we first met, you were predominantly
in the state of Arizona, and now you've kind of expanded.
And
you've had a lot of success. Can you talk about some of the ones that you are more, I guess, more proud of, if that's a word, if that's a way of saying it, that you're proud about how your results compare to many others who are calling things differently?
Oh yeah, no, that's a great question. So yeah, started as Arizona, expanded to Nevada and Utah 3 years ago. Last year we expanded nationally. No one knows this yet, but we plan to expand to California at the end of this year. Whoopsies. My team's going to shoot me for that one. Anyways, but yeah, so that's fun. But no, so a record win-wise, so, you know, people are like, oh, polling's fake or this, that, and the other. I'm like, I can prove it, and let me show you. So, for example, like one of the most recent wins, so the Nevada U.S. Senate race. So there's about five or six battleground U.S. Senate races this last election cycle, and Nevada being one of them. And so you had everyone and their mother polling. It was like 50 pollsters on record, all the big names. We were on there. We were the most accurate to the final election result than anyone else in the country. We were 0.03% off the final number, I think, or 0.3%. So like 0.1% off Jackie Rosen's number, the Democrat, and then 0.2% off Sam Brown. I mean, incredible. But also, like in Arizona, we aced every single election in Arizona, aced everything in Nevada. I think we're 13 of 15. But I think the two that I'm most proud of career-wise, when marijuana legalization, so we'll bring it back to Arizona, marijuana legalization was happening here in the state, and it was first up, I forget, 2016. And everyone had their ASU, everybody out there polling-wise said, oh, it's going to pass. And I said, oh, it's going to be close, but it's going to fail. It's going to fail by a couple points. So I was like Chicken Little over here. I was like, oh, yeah, this thing's going. Anyways, they were all wrong. I was right. It missed by a couple points. Anyways, 4 years later, they put it on the ballot again for recreational marijuana. But I remember at the time I said, hey, no, it's not going to pass. Like, you're anti-marijuana, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no, I don't care. And then 4 years later, we get to it was on the ballot again. I said, hey, it's going to win with 60% of the vote. And they're like, you're pro-marijuana. Like, how dare you? Anyways, Atlanta winning with 60.03% of the vote. And the same thing happened with Trump. I predicted Trump would win in 16. Everyone said I was a MAGA, this, that, and the other. And then 2020, I said, hey, even though no Democrats carried Arizona in two decades, I think Joe Biden's going to win Arizona. And he landed up winning. And then I correctly predicted Trump winning in 2024. So, I mean, those are some notable wins.
Oh, and that polling is always difficult, good and bad. But now that we know, we'll talk to you more about specific polling when we get back after the bottom of our break. So that was the voice of Mike Noble with Noble Predictive Insights. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice, your trusted local news and talk. I got a little confused there. My Zoom was showing me, hey, you're muted. I said, well, of course I'm muted because I'm talking through the radio mic still. So welcome back to the Morning Voice. We've got Mike Noble with Noble Predictive Insights. We talked a little bit about how he got into the business of polling and the importance of polling and what he does with that. So, Mike, I'd like you to go ahead and fill in kind of why do you think polling is important? A lot of governmental entities use surveys as their way of getting data on what the community or the voters think about something. What's the difference and why is polling so critical?
Yeah, well, first off, that's a great question, Ted. So I would say first off, so surveying or polling in general, remember you're measuring public opinion. So I could go out and ask every single person in, let's say, Pima County, every single person their opinion. One, the cost of it, logistics and feasibility is probably impossible. Or doing the voodoo that we do, getting a statistically significant representative sample and making sure it's reflective of the population. So I'm getting, you know, not only regionally, I'm getting enough people in northern Pima County or in the urban core of Pima compared to the rural and the suburbs, and getting the right balance of gender. You know, am I getting 70-30 female to male when it should be 52-48? You know, but then also age. Am I getting just all older folks or all younger folks in the survey, right? And then ethnicity and a couple other demographics, you know, educational attainment. Point is it representative? Is it reflective of the population? To do that, you can do about a 95% accuracy of telling, I can tell you, do they like chocolate ice cream or vanilla ice cream, as a simple example. But so surveys and polling, and by the way, by the importance of it, it's the ultimate check on power. a lot of people say things that are in powerful positions. At the end of the day, what do the people think? You know, do they agree? Do they think this is a good plan or a bad plan? Let the voters decide. And so it's ultimate check on power. So now we fast forward to your question of surveys versus polls. So surveys and polls get mixed up a lot. Polling is public opinion research. So mainly when you're dealing with voters and public policy. So for example, if you're dealing with plans such as like, I don't know, a ballot initiative or an election, you're going to want to talk to voters, because if you can't vote, it doesn't really matter. Because remember, go back to the objective of polling. You want to make sure it's representative of your population or your target audience. So in public policy, the first step is that you got to be registered to vote. If you're not, if you can't even are eligible to play in the game, you shouldn't be in the game. And then the next step is how likely you are to vote. So those are that. But compared to surveys, so what you see a lot, like I notice government, they'll go out and do community surveys. So they'll put there, it's like, oh, we put this link on our website and we put it out on social media. We send out via email. Here's the problem with that, though. You're getting everyone taking these surveys. I had one project just recently where they were doing it in a local region. And someone, one of my folks from California was able to take the survey. But that opinion, that person you know, weighing in on the topic is now being counted of how these decision makers are going to decide. And here's the reality. It's got to be true. Like, is it the voice of the people or not? And so, and also, I think the big thing is that they don't weight their samples. They go, oh, we got 12,000 respondents. Woohoo, this is great. And here's the thing. Are 6,000 of those bad? And the other big thing is when you start making that link public, you have groups that have vested interests, so special interest groups. So whether it's on the environmental side or on the business side, whatever. The point is that this obviously directly would impact them. So they go, hey, being all of our friends, go take this survey, right? And so what happens is that you just start getting it really skewed. And I just feel that at the end of the day, it's defeating the intended purpose of getting the voice of the community heard.
Well, that's a great lead in, and I want to jump into the survey that we contracted, we being a group of different business entities. It wasn't just the Southern Arizona mm-hmm. Leadership Council. I want to thank the Arizona Builders Association, the Civil Engineers Coalition as well for pitching in, Tucson Associated Realtors, Southern Arizona Home Builders Association, the Chamber of Southern Arizona, and the Arizona General Contractors all contributed to make this polling, to get this poll completed. And the importance was, at the same time, RTA, PAG RTA was going out for a survey to try to get it. And our fear was that the survey was going to come back, like you said, with not capturing enough of the underrepresented voices, but also skewing. And we saw the results. I mean, over 2,000 people committed to complete the survey. But it was very apparent what sectors and what organizations figured out how they could get a lot of results on this. And so let's dive a little bit into what the results of the survey you did, trying to mirror some of the questions from the survey, sorry, the poll you did, trying to mirror mm-hmm. some of the survey questions to see when we compared them, how mm-hmm. close were they?
Yeah, no, it's great. Remember, our process, how it's a little different compared to just putting a link out where anyone can do it. You know, our thing was that we're very methodical of defining the population. So the key demographic groups within Pima County, so includes all those age, or those demographics I talked about, age, ethnicity, region, income, et cetera. And then also making sure it's a representative slice as Pima County as a whole, and then understanding Pima fully with, I think we did about just over 600 respondents, which, to put in perspective, you can easily do a statewide survey of Arizona, which, remember, Pima is just one of 15 counties. You could do a statewide for 400 sample and be, you know, relatively within the ballpark. I mean, we did 600 for one county. So that's a lot.
And that's a great point, because everybody goes, you interviewed 600, and I think it was almost 650 people in Pima mm-hmm. County. That it's a 1.1 million people. So how can that be accurate? But you get it down to a percentage.
Statistics. Yeah. It's called statistics. So, you know, think of it as like, you know, here's the thing, is that when you look at the margin of error, when you look at, okay, so if you did that, what does that come out to? So you have the fuzziness of the number, it's just under 4%. So if you have like a 56% on something, that could be up to, you know, 60 or 52. Well, that's really good, and it, you have a 95% confidence level with it. It's just at the end of the day, it's quality over quantity. And a lot of people mix that up, because I will take this 600 survey all day over a 2,000, 5,000, 10, because at the end of the day, are those 2,000 people even live in Pima County? You know, and also, is it 80%, you know, older folks and 20% younger folks? Does it have folks that are in more of the, you know, more demographic, the economically, you know, hardened districts, right? So people that are underrepresented, especially like Hispanic Latinos, are we getting the right voices that are is true to make up Pima County?
And on top of it, you can also weight that so that it reflects.
So you get in the ballpark. So for example, you know, certain groups, it's hard to get everything right on, you know, on the mark. But the goal is to get as close as you can. And then when we do weighting, which people throw that around, easy way to describe it. Weighting is once you have it, you kind of stretching out your, think of a picture, like if you have some gum or like Play-Doh, so, you know, something stretchy, right? And you're starting to pull, you can pull it a little bit, you're fine. You pull it too much, that's not good. So for example, you can get in trouble with weighting. If let's say Hispanic Latino, let's say I only had 5% of my sample was Hispanic Latino of the respondents that I got, but let's say it's 28% is the total number of Hispanic Latinos I'm supposed to have in there, and I weight that up. I now make them almost six times more important. Those opinions of that 5% now become six times stronger. So it gets amplified really strong, and that can really throw you off. So you don't want to weight too much. And that's why we have this thing called in stats called weighting efficiency. It tells you basically how much you're stretching your sample.
Well, Mike, this sounds like it's been a good topic because we have a caller calling in, and Cynthia's on line two, and she has a question for you about polling. So Cynthia, go ahead with your question.
Hi, my name's Debbie. Are you talking to me?
I am. So Debbie,
it's my bad. Okay, sorry, Debbie. Yeah.
We got that one wrong.
It's Debbie. That's what
no,
I meant.
No problem. Hi, thanks for letting me ask a question. This is a great opportunity because I've always wondered about, well, not always, but a lot lately. I used to participate in polling, and I understand why it's important for the people who are running for office, but I've begun to feel that as if a participant in those polls, that all I'm doing is giving the politicians a script, and they can then say whatever you, after you've polled me and I've told you what I want, then you tell the politician, and then they say that, but they don't do that. So if you could speak to that, and I'm just going to go ahead and hang up. Thank you.
Thank you for the call, Debbie, and thank you for listening. And that is a good question, and I'd encourage you to continue with polling. But Mike, why is it important that people participate?
No, that's a great question. You know, it's funny being in the space as long as I have, and I'm big. I'm not just sitting behind the computer. I'm out in the community a lot. So, Debbie, appreciate that question. It's great. Is that I think it was what happened is the polling industry overall is good, but I feel like just a lot of places there's good and bad actors. Like for ourselves, or let's say some of these other groups like Pew Research or Gallup, I would say are some of the good actors, basically the nonpartisans. But to your point, I spent half my career in partisan politics or on that side of the campaigns. She's not wrong. Is that basically polling is used as a strategic tool. And yes, it does get on the campaign side. So, you know, super PACs, anybody running for office basically or in office, they'll poll, but basically they're saying, okay, we know they'll test messaging. Like, hey, if I say this, do people like that or like me less? And for example, let's go at the highest level, because it's used all throughout from upper to lower levels in politics, but the higher you're up, the more they rely on it. Remember the government, right? When they roll out these plans, how do you think when you hear the name like Build Back Better? Remember that one that came out a few years ago? Build Back Better. Man, that just rolls off the tongue like, wow, Build Back Better. I mean, whether you liked what was in there or not, that's irregardless. I'm talking about the branding of it. It's like Build Back Better. Like, yeah, like yeah, sounds fine. Anyways, you know, they pulled that focus group that and tested it to know, because you can guess or you can know. And I think here's the thing is that polling, you can't control what the people do with the polling. So if someone wants to take it and use it nefariously, you can't do that. What I think polling, why it's important or it's very helpful is that, again, it's the population can be heard. So your voices can be heard. So, hey, do you like this policy? You're like, no. It's like, ooh, I probably shouldn't introduce that policy because my constituents are going to be really, really mad. And at the end of the day, that's who they serve. So I think it's really just, there's a lot of bad actors out there. Like people will put out a poll, say, hey, take this one question poll. Like, do you hate Nancy Pelosi? And ultimately you click the button and it says, now donate $100 to me today. And it's like, that's not a survey. That was really a fundraising, a fundraising move. So anyways, I think polling itself, good and bad actors, but there's still some good ones, but some people do abuse it, sadly.
And Mike, I think one of the points you brought out is it's who's doing the polling and who's funding it.
100%.
There is some funding it unless you go with somebody that you know is their goal is to have the accurate data, which Noble Predictive Insights does. Yet I've used you before where you've given us results that I said, that's not what I wanted to hear, but it was the facts of what it was.
I know what you wanted, but people said otherwise.
Right. And some of them, right. there's a lot of ways as a pollster, you can skew the questions and that's always questioned.
And if
you're looking for a specific answer, they get there. So Debbie, I think what that tells you is please continue to participate. And you're right. There are people that are going to use it for their things. We've got to go to a break because we've blown through most of this session. I'm hoping we will actually get to some of these results, but if we don't, that's okay, because I'll be bringing Mike back. So you're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk. Please stay with us and you'll hear a little about RTA. Welcome back. This is The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Mike Noble with Noble Predictive Insights has taught us a lot about polling, and it's been a great discussion. Yeah, the reason I brought him on was to try to get to this RTA discussion, and we're going to get there, but we are going to be up against the clock, Matt, Mike, so we've really got about 3 minutes left. I think
two-minute drill.
Yeah, it is going to be quick. So everybody in Southern Arizona, hopefully, the poll will tell me otherwise, is aware of RTA Next. That's the Regional Transportation Authority half-cent sales tax proposed for $2.4 billion over 20 years. And we want to get more information versus the survey that was done that told us some stuff, which 100% of those people that took the survey know about RTA Next by definition. What did your poll show about the public's knowledge about RTA Next? And
it was fascinating. I know the folks on the RTA weren't so thrilled about it because, you know, they live, sleep, and breathe RTA. But does the average voter in Pima, do they? And it was interesting in the pretest, 8 out of 10 Pima County voters haven't heard enough or undecided about RTA. So 8 in 10 didn't have an opinion. 20% did have an opinion. Of that, 15% were positive, 5% were negative. But then we educated them saying, hey, this is the plan. This is what it's going to do. This is kind of what's proposed. You know, give them the facts or educate them a little bit of what's going on without leading them. So again, facts, not rhetoric. And then once we did that, we saw a massive shift where two-thirds of them, of voters, actually had an opinion. So 67% had an opinion. And 56% of that were positive, 11 negative. So overall, you had a net positive score of 45, plus 45. So net positive. Among those that have opinion, is it good or bad?
I actually loved that because it did 13% were only 13% said they even knew about RTA Next. And then, but that didn't mean they didn't have an opinion. But again, it was a small. You jumped it up significantly when you educated them on what was in it.
But also when you look at it, that's the thing is by doing a full survey, like we start off very wide about asking attitudinal sentiment questions about just in general their environment of the roads, etc. And one of the interesting tidbits, 9 out of 10 respondents of the voters in the survey said that the roads in Pima County need improvement, where 44% of them said the roads were basically terrible, right? And so, I mean, it's clearly a pain point for voters and they want to see something done, but when explaining with the plan, they're like, yeah, that sounds great. With very little negative from it.
All right, you've got about 1 minute. What about the difference between people's, you actually got less than 1 minute, so let's go 30 seconds. Okay. What as far as cars, transit, mm-hmm. bike, ped, what did the poll tell you?
It's easy. The poll told us car is still king. The other ones are some people use them, right? But when you look at especially when you look at socioeconomic level, you would think that, you know, folks that are really low income, like they pretty much only ride the bus or whatever. No, cars were still the most dominant one, even with the lower ends of the socioeconomic ladder, which I think was really interesting. But the real takeaway from the survey is that car is king, public transit, yes, and some of these other ones, but you can't get around. I mean, the roads, I mean, that's how everyone, and again, whether you're affluent or not affluent.
All right. Well, hate to do this, Mike. We've teased the public. Yep. We'll come back with you more. I appreciate you being here. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted note, local news and talks. Thank Mike. Welcome back to the second hour of the Morning Voice engagement hour version. I've got Matt Neely behind the glass. Matt, that was quite an experience right there.
That was
trying
a great conversation you had with Mr. Noble.
I love the conversation, but I'll tell you, having the Zoom, trying to run it there, it's going to take some getting used to if we do go to that, because it was challenging for me at times just from a distraction standpoint.
Well,
I mean, and it's very easy having the video and the Zoom, it kind of sometimes changes your cadence and your conversation. But it was unique. I think I see it could be a great improvement. But it was definitely different. So
throws a few curveballs on my side too. So, but it's okay.
Oh yeah, hey, appreciated the caller calling in and participating. Appreciated
that was a great question. His answer was very interesting. Yeah.
It is. Polling is a very interesting thing. There's no doubt in my mind, I mean, zero doubt, if it's done with the right intentions, and that is to get the accuracy and inform both the electeds and others on what's and the elected officials. But it's got to be done correctly. And I do, it's one of the things I appreciate about Noble Predictive Insights is I think Mike's goal is he just wants to be accurate. He takes a lot of pride in when they get it right.
Well, it's changed because now a lot of people don't answer polls. So you have to kind of calibrate for a lot of different factors that you didn't have to before.
And I thought that was the great thing about the question. You know, Debbie said very clearly, I used to participate in polls, but now I don't because I think it's just used. They take my data and either manipulate it or ignore it. And that's, again, that's all about our politically elected officials. Speaking of politically elected officials, we've been joined this morning. We've been joined this morning by the chair of the Board of Supervisors of Pima County, Rex Scott. Rex, I appreciate you joining us today. How you doing?
Ted, having a great morning so far. Hope the same is true for you and Matt and all your listeners.
So far, so good for us here. I know you're preparing for what could be a very big and long day as you have a Pima County board agenda that I'll be real honest. Looking at your agendas, I've never tried to take that close of a look, but since I thought we'd spend some time talking it today, that's one heck of an agenda.
Well, you know, we only meet twice a month. And the county has 1.1 million residents, over 7,000 employees. We're responsible for the provision of a great many services and supports to our constituents. And there's always a lot of business that the board has to take care of at any one of our two meetings.
Well, there's no doubt. I believe you've got five different executive sessions today. You're in the beginning of the budget throes, or I guess coming up on the end, depending how you want to look at it. And then there's also some other issues. We're going to get to some of that in the second section of this first half hour with you. The ones I want to get to right away is there's been some changing of the boards, especially throughout the region. We'll talk a little bit about you've seen the RTA board change, four new members. Matter of fact, the Pima County representatives already changed twice this year. You had been the stalwart RTA board representative since you have been elected, I believe. You came on pretty quick after that. And so there's been a lot of changes, as well as a new mayor from South Tucson, new representative of the Pasquayaki tribe, as well a new chairman there, as well as John Post taking the mayor's position after the passing of Ed Honey. So there four out of the nine have changed there. But even on the Board of Supervisors, you've had some change. So now Andres Cano has joined, taking Adelita Grijalva's spot as the board appointed that. And you're the chair of all this. What's your assessment of right now the makeup of the Pima County Board of Supervisors? And if you're willing to talk about this, has it created the changes? Have they changed anything in how you're going to either conduct as chair or your role representing District 1?
Well, I think what your last the last part of your question speaks to how I believe supervisors not only normally approach their duties, but should approach their duties, which is that you are there to be the advocate for and the voice of the over 200,000 people that you represent in your district. And we're very fortunate at the local level and in politics, partisanship is not as significant a factor as it is at the state and federal levels. But each one of us is obliged to represent the needs and concerns of the people in our district. And that's certainly the way I've tried to conduct myself as the representative of District 1, which is most of northern and northwestern Pima County. And I'm sure that's the way that my colleagues try to conduct themselves as the representatives of their districts.
I think that's a great point. It's one I think you hear sometimes in the press and others going, is that really representative of the district they represent? Because in Pima County, it is a huge county, and each one of your districts is very diverse.
Definitely. And, you know, my district, we redraw the lines after every census, because the populations of the districts are supposed to be as equal as possible. But my district has consistently had the highest number of registered voters. People in District 1 not only register to vote, but they turn out in elections. And my district is also the most purple of the five districts. We're pretty evenly divided between Democrats, Republicans, and Independents.
There's no doubt, as a resident in District 1, as I live up in the Oro Valley area, it's definitely very, very diverse region. It is one of between District 1 and District 4. It's one of the two districts that I believe pay a larger segment of some of the tax basis that you have the opportunity to explore. So does that play into your mind as you go through this budgeting process?
It absolutely does, Ted. I think we are, it's incumbent upon us as elected officials to make sure that all the services and supports that people in the county depend upon are delivered with responsiveness to their needs, with equity, but also with a trust for the public tax dollars that are entrusted to us. And I don't think we should ever go to the voters and the property taxpayers asking for more from them until we've done everything possible to get our own fiscal house in order. And that is certainly a mindset that I have anytime we're going through annual budgeting.
All right. Well, I was going to go into Arte, but I'll save that. You kind of brought up the budget then, and let's go in that direction. What are your current thoughts as you look at the current proposed budget in relationship to both your revenues and your expenses? What are your concerns, I guess, as you look at going forward with the current budget?
Well, it's a good thing when a region's property base grows in value. And we have seen the property base in Pima County grow in value, I believe, 9 of the last 10 years. But that's also something that we need to be mindful of when we are setting the overall property tax rate, the combination of the primary property tax and the three secondary property taxes that we charge. So the recommended budget, you're going to see me today talking about things that we can do to look at a lower overall property tax rate than what was recommended in the budget. And we got a memo from the county administrator late last week that indicated that there is capacity to make some additional cuts in the recommended budget so that we can potentially recommend a lower overall property tax rate. And again, that's consistent with that mindset that I have, that we need to do everything we can to get our own fiscal house in order before we ask anything additional from our property taxpayers.
So if I was reading it right on the, and I'm looking at the memos from Administrator Lesher from this year versus last year, it looks like right now in the proposed budget, when it goes to 5.2317, so it would be the new per $100 of taxable assessed net value. So it's about a 0.13 increase as it's proposed right now. And so what you just alluded to there, you're looking at trying to keep it at maybe the 5.1048 or maybe even lower it?
Well, there are certain board policies in terms of funding our pay-as-you-go program that pays for capital improvements. In terms of looking at the costs that we incur from costs that are shifted to us by state government, and also making sure that we have the proper amount in terms of a general fund reserve to guard against any kind of financial emergency or unpredictable events. Those board policies that are in place are going to lead to a certain amount of increases in the primary property tax rate. But there's also, if you look at the proposal from the county administrator, an increase that is devoted to what she refers to as county operations or increased costs in county operations. That's the area where she's also indicated that if she gets direction from the board, she can make some additional cuts so that ultimately what we'd like to see is an overall property tax rate that really is just a function of the board policies that I referred to earlier. And the one that's really significant, Ted, is the one dealing with state cost shifts. The total amount of state cost shifts is right around $112 million, and that is responsible for right around 25% of the overall rate for the primary property tax.
Yeah, there's obviously some things that are outside of the control of the board. It's a good thing that property values are going up, but that leads to paying increased tax, even if the rate doesn't move. And so I appreciate you considering taking a look at that, because with the uncertainty and the of how the economy and other issues in the region as well as nationally are going forward, I think your voters would be happy to know that you're going to try to keep that that increase at a minimum, if not level set. So I appreciate that from a District 1 representative.
Well, thank you. And the other thing that we try to be mindful of, Ted, is that we're only one taxing entity in terms of charging property taxes. There's also the school districts, the fire districts, Pima Community College, the Central Arizona Water Conservation District that's responsible for the delivery of CAP water. So when you get your property tax bill, Pima County is just one of the entities charging you property tax, but we try to be mindful of that fact and also the increases in valuation that we talked about earlier.
So there's another property tax issue being discussed on at this board meeting. And before we go to the break, I'd like to get your assessment right now of the proposal
Sure.
by Supervisor Hines regarding what I would call a cascading or continuing over a 10-year period tax increase to cover affordable housing.
You know, I have appreciated the fact that we've had really a consensus among the majority on the board in terms of how to approach the critical need for additional housing in our region. The home building industry is still bouncing back from the Great Recession of 2008-2009. Rents are way too high. There are people who are struggling to afford their mortgages. But I don't think it makes prudent sense to talk about funding a plan before you have a plan. And so I appreciate the intent. I appreciate the thoughtfulness behind my colleague's proposal. But we don't even have a plan yet. The Regional Affordable Housing Commission is not going to have a draft plan to us until late in the fall. And I think talking about funding a plan before you have a plan in place is putting the cart before the horse.
I think that's a very fair assessment. So we're going to take a break right now. That's the voice of Supervisor Rex Scott, the chairman of the Board of Supervisors for Pima County. You're listening at 10:30, The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Stay with us after the break. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. 5 days, five different hosts, five different topics. And today you've got the engagement hour. I am your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely's behind the glass. And with us is the Pima County Chair of the Board of Supervisors, Rex Scott. Rex, appreciate you being on with us this morning. I was in a pinch and you came through. So thanks for joining us today.
Happy to do it, Ted. Thanks for the invite.
So we do have a question from a caller, and it's a question about process, and that Susan's question is, why is the PEEPS program funded out of the library district versus a normal budget process?
I really appreciate the question, and there's some history involved here. When we first committed to funding preschool scholarships for low-income families.
And Supervisor, hold on one sec. Let me make sure that everybody understands. PEEPS is funding for early childhood education inside of Pima County through a program set up to get students who would not have the opportunity to go to early childhood education. I just wanted to make sure everybody knew that. You and I talk in PEEPS. Anybody who talks it knows it, but it's kind of sounds like it might be something for Easter. But go back to your answer.
Good to have the background information. I appreciate that. So when we made that commitment back in 2021, we were going to make a commitment out of the general fund. But then the county administrator found out by contacting the appropriate authorities at the federal level that we could use pandemic relief funds that were granted to all local governments around the country to pay for the program for as long as those funds held out. And so it's paid for the first roughly 4 years of the program. Something else that's important to point out is that counties are subdivisions of the state. We can't do anything without permission from the legislature and the governor. And back before this board was even seated, a bipartisan majority of the Arizona State Legislature Governor Doug Ducey, our previous governor, signed legislation that allowed any county to use a portion of the secondary property tax that funds its library district to pay for early childhood education. So now that those pandemic relief funds have been exhausted, we started to build up a reserve in the library district funding, and we're going to make use of that reserve and also take a look at where the tax rate needs to be set moving forward to both support the program and to make sure that library operations are never impacted.
And I think that's an important piece of it. It's not the intent to use it instead of funding the libraries. In the legislation, it's very clear that one of the objectives is early childhood literacy that is being addressed by the libraries, and thus the reason you can use library funds to fund early childhood education, because why? It's going to address early childhood literacy. And we know the rates that just were published regarding the reading proficiency in our local school districts have a lot of room to improve, and a lot of that's based on early childhood literacy, what they enter the school system knowing and being able to do on the reading side.
No question. And because of that legislation that was passed several years ago and signed by Governor Ducey, any county in the state could do what Pima County has been doing since 2021. I'm very active in our state's County Supervisors Association, and a number of my colleagues around the state have expressed interest in our program because they have the same need in their communities in terms of making sure that all their families who want their kids to get high-quality preschool education are able to do that.
Absolutely, and throughout the state, there are many library districts that work specifically on that early childhood literacy, sometimes through programs at the libraries, but also through the concept of the PEEPS program, and it's a way of trying to get more youth exposed to reading skills at a younger age.
Definitely.
Okay, so I guess that was kind of both of our advertising on that. So we've got, I want to let you go at the bottom of the hour, or if you want to stay past the break, if you can, we can do that too. But I definitely want to hear from you what your thoughts of the current situation at the RTA.
Well, you know, I really hope that this situation with securing legal counsel can be resolved. I know there's a meeting in a couple of days of the regional council and the RTA board to bring in new legal counsel. After that, I certainly hope that whatever needs to be addressed with regard to the status of the executive director is addressed quickly, because the board needs to get back to the business of getting an RTA next plan in front of voters. And something that we were hoping, certainly you and I were hoping, was going to be on the ballot this spring is now looking like it's going to be on the ballot next spring, which is taking us up right to the edge of the cliff in terms of the end of this tax and the program that it has supported for the last 20 years. And what it would mean for not just infrastructure in our region, but also our economic development prospects, if we're not able to come together as a region and address these issues, is significant. And I don't like to think of the consequences and ramifications of not moving forward with the new 20-year plan, because the impact on the region in so many different areas, infrastructure, economic development, you can go on and on, would just be very dire.
So you had a lot of time, and you served as the chair one the year prior to, actually you served as the chair of PAG the same time I served as the chair of the RTA. You've been very involved. So now as the chair of the board, and now that Matt Hines, Supervisor Hines, is the representative to the RTA, what's your role or advice? How are you going to interact with him as this thing moves forward?
So what I've encouraged Supervisor Hines to do is exactly what I did for 4 years, which is before any meeting of the regional council and the RTA board, sit down with the county administrator, the deputy county administrator, the transportation director, directors from other departments that have an interest in what's on the agenda, and go through that agenda and make sure that your position and everything that you're going to say in those meetings is reflective of the county's position. I think if he takes that approach, then he's going to be the kind of representative Pima County needs and deserves.
Well, I hope you continue to voice your opinion with him as well. You got time to stay around for one question regarding the differential water rates when we get back.
Sure.
All right.
Absolutely.
Thank you. That's the chair of the Board of Supervisors for Pima County, Rex Scott. He'll join us after the break to talk a little water. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Breaking news as we come
Breaking
back
news.
In. As we come back, unfortunately, I don't believe Grant Kruger will be there either, because he is still in Chicago this morning because he's back at the National Restaurant Show. Tune in tomorrow morning for the Morning Voice, and you may learn a little bit more about what he learns new and going on the national stage for restaurants.
Nobody's in Qatar or anything like that today.
As far as we know, he's not coming back from Qatar, so that's definitely not won't be the situation. So Supervisor Rex Scott, representing District 1, is with us. He's also the chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. Appreciate you staying on real quick, Supervisor, and I just want to get your opinion on one issue, and then at that point I'll let you get on your day, because you've got a full schedule for a meeting starting in about 25 minutes.
Yes, sir.
So, differential water rates. It's become a big deal. There was actually a really good article talking about why they believe the rates should be different. There's the counties now, looks like they're either negotiating or something's happening with Tucson where that you're going to have some water rates. And as always, the unincorporated Pima County is the one that is sitting in the unknown, because the latest increase in differential water rates, it gives exceptions to incorporated people that live in Pima County. So what's your thoughts right now on the differential water rates, and where do you see that going?
Well, I was disappointed when the resolution that I put forth opposing the new proposal from the city was not passed by my colleagues. I just think that, look, you're talking about people who have been Tucson Water ratepayers in many cases for decades, and people who live in the unincorporated county make up about a third of the ratepayers of Tucson Water. The methodology that the city used to justify this proposal was based on just looking at what it took to deliver water to those residents of unincorporated county. It was not a holistic cost of service study of their entire system. And their system ranges from Corona de Tucson all the way up to the village of Catalina. And if they had done a comprehensive cost of service study and based rates on that, that would have been one thing. But what they did was they were upset that they lost the lawsuit that we successfully brought against them based on their first proposal, and they used both their paid consultants and the city attorney's office to come up with a plan that may pass legal muster, but it's still not right because it treats one-third of their ratepayers in a discriminatory and unfair way. And so I'm going to continue to advocate for the people in my district who are affected by this. I wish that my colleagues had joined me in that resolution, but there was discussion after the resolution failed by all of us that they do want the county administrator to follow up with the city in terms of everything that we can do to ensure not just rate parity for all Tucson Water ratepayers, but the best possible uses of water and effluent and everything else associated with this resource.
Well, I appreciate that one support for those who live outside of the city in that. I think your assessment's one that I agree with. It's been since 1977 that we've had the same water rates inside and outside the city. And remember, the city gets all of the CAP water for this region delivered into Tucson Water. So they've got some, I believe there's responsibilities they have to take in that. But that's, you know, when we're relying on decisions made almost 48 years ago, everybody starts, you know, seeing it from a different perspective. So I appreciate your voice representing those who do live in District 1 and throughout unincorporated Pima County. So Supervisor Scott, I appreciate you being with us this morning. I want to let you go, and good luck with your meeting today. I hope it's efficient and effective and not overburdensome, because it could be a long one.
Well, it's a blessing to be able to serve in this role, Ted. I'm grateful to the people of District 1 for giving me another 4 years in the election last year, and I really enjoy being part of this policymaking board, because policymaking is synonymous with problem solving.
I appreciate that. Appreciate you joining us today. And that's the voice of Supervisor Rex Scott, the chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors. Best of luck today, sir.
Thanks very much, Ted. You take care.
Thank you. Well, Matt, that's always an interesting interview when we have the chair of the board on. I thought Supervisor Scott was on point on a lot of issues. Now there's a long way to go with the tax rates inside the budget for this year, and we'll see if he can come through with some of the things he talked about.
The proof will be in the pudding, right? What
Absolutely.
They can talk about rates all they want to, but when you factor in values, that's where the rubber meets the road, and that's what our property tax bills. And he said he was aiming to make it no change from last year, so we'll see.
It was an interesting take.
There's five votes, so he's got to get three votes.
During his reelection campaign, he was heavily criticized for saying we've been reducing the rates, not recognizing that doesn't mean you're reducing how much people are paying.
The county administrator said it in an article a week or so ago.
And I think it's real important that, yes, even if the rates never change over time, as long as the property values are going in the right way. I've personally got a lot of concerns with Supervisor Hines's proposal because, one, I think it's not flushed out. And you heard Supervisor Scott just said there's not even a plan yet. So why are we taxing before or proposing taxes before we even know what the plan is?
Yeah.
And I fully agree with that. And that's kind of some of what we're dealing with at the RTA as well. I would like to tell there are a lot of good opinion pieces that are in the Daily Star. And I'll tell you, a lot of folks don't agree with a lot of them. And it's fun watching now is there's a huge battle in the letter of the editors between the conservatives and the Republicans on whether the Star is a conservative rag or a left-leaning okay. thing. It's gotten interesting just from an entertainment standpoint.
Okay.
And I do read the Star daily because of my job and because of this show. But I would strongly suggest people read the Water Service Realities in Tucson op-ed today by Matt Summers. Matt Summers spent 22 years at Tucson Water. He's a graduate of the University of Arizona, and he was a resident for Tucson for over 65 years. Now, I fundamentally don't agree with what he comes out, but he gives you a lot of the history. That's how I learned about it. It was 1977 when the region said, we're going to do postage stamp approach. AKA everybody pays the same price.
Uh-huh.
I've got a problem with postage stamps in the US, but that's because 49, you know, now it's up to 90 some odd cents or 79. Can send it anywhere. Well, in Belgium or in Europe, guess what? The amount you pay for your postage depends on how far the thing's going.
Uh-huh.
So that there's a lot of pros and cons, but I do think it's a good article to give people some history.
Take a look at it.
So let's go to a break. And when we come back, we're going to have Stephen Levine with RJP Estate Planning to tell us about the importance of having a living will or a living trust, not a living will. So we'll be right back after the break. Good morning and welcome back. You are listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host. As always, Matt Neely is carrying us from behind the glass. Stay with us on 10:30, The Voice, a Bustos Media Station. At 9 o'clock hour, you'll have Wynn Tucson with Kathleen Wynn. So please stay on and listen to what she's got to say. Always something of interest, and definitely if you're into learning more about the political situation and what's going on, she will provide you a lot of good content there. So now we're joined by Stephen Levine from RJP Estate Planning, because today you'll be learning why putting off your estate plan could be devastating for the people you love. So stay with us for the next few minutes and find out what you can do today to protect your family and your legacy. The last thing most of us want to think about is what happens to our assets after we pass away. But here's the truth. If we don't make a plan now and something unexpected happens, our loved ones could be left with a legal mess, a delayed inheritance that could end up being much less, and extra stress during a time of grieving. Stephen from RJP Estate Planning is here to explain what can go wrong without a proper estate plan and what you can do to avoid that. He'll also share the powerful story of RJP's estate planning's founder, Deb Placit, and how she had to overcome personal tragedy for the sake of her daughters. Good morning, Stephen.
Morning, Ted. How are you?
Hey, it's great to have you on as always. And why is it so important to create an estate plan now and not later?
Yeah. So, you know, thanks again for having me on. Always good to be here. Simply put, you know, tomorrow is not promised to anybody. So we've all lost people in our lives. It's just a part of life. And tragically, nobody can predict a heart attack, a stroke, sudden illness, or even a freak accident. So this doesn't even include millions of people who enter hospice care, become incapacitated. When something does happen and leave you incapacitated unexpectedly, like dementia or a medical emergency, it's often too late to create a legal estate plan and have the right documents. So at RJP Estate Planning, you know, we often hear new clients say, I've been meaning to do this for years. I keep putting it off until something happens to me or somebody tells me to do it. Unfortunately, waiting too long can mean your assets and the people you love aren't protected. Your medical wishes aren't honored. A lot of people think that a simple will is enough. In Arizona, it's not. If you own a home, you have personal assets over $75,000. That includes bank accounts, your investments. Your estate will likely go through what we call the probate process, unless you have a living trust. So probate is a legal process that can take months, even years. After the legal fees are paid, that really deducts from what your loved ones may inherit. So they're going to potentially get far less than what you intended them to get. And it is heartbreaking.
Stephen, I agree. It's heartbreaking. It's something you don't want to experience, especially when people die unexpectedly. And it happens more often than we think. As you said earlier, millions enter hospice every year in the United States alone.
Exactly. And you know, when I've spoken with hospice nurses, they often tell me one of the biggest regrets that their patients have at the end of their life is not creating the right estate plan, because protecting your loved ones isn't just about documents, it's about peace of mind. At RJP Estate Planning, we offer free consultations up to an hour if you need it, to review your assets, answer questions, help you protect your family. In most cases, we recommend a living trust, because a living trust is the best way to avoid probate, decide how and when your assets are passed down to who you want them to go to, keep your affairs private, unlike probate, which is public. Trust also protects your family from creditors and those extended relatives that, you know, somebody passes away, there's money. That's when we hear all the time, people come out of the woods, come out of the woodwork. And proper estate plans ensure that you're covered if you become incapacitated. To be clear, a will is not the same. So a will does not offer that those same protections you get with the overall living trust. A will still requires your estate to go through probate.
So, Stephen, when is the right time for someone to get a living trust?
So every state's different. If you live in Arizona, either part-time or full-time, and if you own a home or have over $75,000 in personal assets, the time's now. So a living trust allows your assets to pass directly to the people you care about the most without the probate, saving time, saving money, and all that undue stress. A real example I like to share is a story about Deb Placid. She's the founder of RJP Estate Planning. Back in 2019, her husband Jim passed away suddenly. She was left a widow. She had two teenage daughters. She's grieving. She had to keep her family together, keep her business running. Thankfully, she had a living trust in place. Her assets were protected. Fortunately, there was a life insurance policy, helped her pay for her daughter's college. And then the pandemic hit. Just a year later, she pushed through. Today, we're proud to say RJP Estate Planning's helped over 40,000 families here in Arizona protect their assets and their loved ones since 1995.
That's a great story, and it's clearly, Deb is a strong woman to go through all that, getting her daughter through college and still keeping her business going.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. Her, you know, the background's a big thing. So I know she was raised by a military family. Her father was respected Navy admiral. I think he was chief of staff of the 7th Fleet during the Vietnam War. So she's been around that strength growing up, and her mother, you know, still help support families. Later, she's got involved with Wounded Warriors, which is an organization that provides emotional and financial support for veterans and loved ones. So it's no surprise that her life missions become really helping families, especially retirees. And that's really all synonymous with what we're doing here with estate planning is protecting people and families and plan for the future with confidence.
We've talked about having Deb on the show to tell kind of her father's story and what it was like growing up in a military family, but that certainly helps explain why so many families trust RJP. Earlier, you mentioned that RJP offers a comprehensive estate plan, not just a living trust. Can you explain what that includes?
Sure, yeah. So a full estate plan includes, number one, a living trust. That includes a pour-over will. So every trust has a built-in will. These documents together protect your loved ones and your assets after you pass. The package also includes your medical power of attorney and your financial power of attorney. Those are really important. Those documents protect and work together to protect you while you're alive, to make sure that you're assigning who you want to be your agent, to be in charge, to make those medical decisions, those financial decisions for you if you're, say, mentally incapacitated and you can't. At RJP Estate Planning, we handle all of these documents. It's efficient. It's affordable. Thanks to the thousands of families we've helped over the last 30 years, we have a great system in place. It's affordable. We make it affordable. We make it easy. So any listener that's over 60 years old, we offer a 65% discount on their comprehensive plan. That includes all those documents. You'll get a physical binder. You'll get a digital flash drive. You can share those documents with your family, with your executors. We do free annual reviews. Anytime there's a law change, we call you in. We update those law changes within your package. Most importantly to me is the free settlement support that your family receives when that time comes. After you pass away, it's our job to really hold their hand and walk them through the process. We personally guide the surviving family members through the process of how to settle the estate get their inheritance quickly and privately. So for the 65% discount on your plan, call us by this Thursday, May 22nd. That's 520-441-4523, 520-441-4523.
Thank you so much for joining us today, Stephen. As you said, tomorrow isn't promised to any of us. My wife and I both have a living trust together. And so if you're listening and you're healthy today, this is your opportunity to protect your family's financial future. Don't wait. Take advantage of RJP's 65% discount on a comprehensive estate plan. If you're 60 or over, call them by Thursday, May 22nd, to schedule your free consultation. Again, that number is 520-441-4523. That's 520-441-4523. Stephen, as always, thank you for being on the show and sharing the services that you have to offer.
Of course. Thanks, Ted. Have a good rest of the week.
You too. Have a great week.
You too. Bye.
Thank you. Well, Matt, it's been a great
Another
show.
Another one down.
Another one down.
Podcast will be up soon if you missed it.
Keep moving forward. We're about to start hitting the dog days and the hot days of summer. Looks like it's going to heat up the rest of this week. And I appreciate all you do to keep the Morning Voice moving forward and improving. And we really need the support of our listeners and your feedback. So please do not hesitate. Try to make it out to Caruso's. Again, my apologies for not being there tonight, but there are plenty of hosts that would love to hear from you and talk to you. So everybody have a great weekend.